The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Welcome to Red Leg Nation Radio, your home for discussion and analysis of Cincinnati Reds baseball all year long. Now here's your host, Chad Dotson.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Red Leg Nation Radio. This is episode number 232 of the World's Most Dangerous Podcast. I'm your host, Chad Dotson. Joining me again today, the heart and soul of Red Leg Nation Radio, Bill Lack. How are you today, Bill?
The elder statesman of Red Leg Nation.
Yeah, I need to remember that. I keep forgetting what we call you.
I don't care what you call me. Just call me for supper.
That's right. Amen. All right, we got a lot to get to today. We got a fun interview with, and we'll intro it a little more later. But
we've got a very special guest later.
Yeah, special guest later. We'll stay tuned for that because it's a really, really fun talk. A short talk, but a good talk with one of our old friends here from Red Leg Nation Radio. But before we get to that, a couple of items in the news that we need to talk about. And even before we get to that, I want to mention, I talked last week and the week before about the Books by the Banks Book Festival in downtown Cincinnati this past weekend. So not technically by the banks, but... the name of it.
Where it came from is a whole different question.
Right, but I was, and Bill, you came down for it. I was really blown away by that whole thing. It was just all day long, basically a free event with just a bunch of authors signing books, talking to readers, author panels, and really appreciate those of you that stopped by and said hello and got a book. And that's a great event, right?
Actually, I was very, very impressed. I went to the panel. Which, what was it, Sports in Cincinnati or Sports Authors? What was it?
Sports in Cincinnati, I think, was the name of the panel.
The funniest thing to me was you and Chad and the two guys that wrote the Bengals book got most of the questions, you and Chris. But it was very apparent that the four of you were the ones that had never done this before.
What do you mean by that?
Well, because the other guys brought, like, Arardi brought pictures,
yeah,
and the guy that did the beep guy, which was fascinating.
Yeah,
one of these authors wrote a book about blind and vision impaired people playing baseball, and it's a fascinating subject.
Yeah, the book's called
Beep. He brought the beep baseball and stuff. So they all had props, and you guys were just there. You know, you were so. You know, over the you guys were so had so much information you didn't need props.
We were just happy to be there, happy to be invited.
But it was very interesting. Anytime you're on a panel with John Arardi, you ought to be impressed.
Yeah, no, it was great. John's great. John's been on the podcast, of course, and love his book that's out now. And it was a good panel. It was a really good event, and a bunch of people came out to buy the Big 50. The Men in Moments.
There he goes.
There he goes again.
He hadn't plugged it in 4 minutes. He was overdue.
Bill, I'm shameless. You know that.
There ain't no doubt about that. I've known you too many years.
That's a fact.
Did you end up with any books at the end of the day?
I actually did not purchase any, but Chris.
No. I mean, did you guys sell all you had?
Oh, no, not all of them, but almost.
Yeah. Because they were moving like hotcakes when I was there.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I couldn't believe the number of people that were coming through and buying books, and it's always fun.
Multiple copies.
Yeah, oh, yeah, yeah. Can you sign three for me? It was fantastic. And I want to I did already make note of the listeners that came out to say hi, and I want to especially note one who couldn't make it, but he sent his this lovely young woman came up and said, you know, look, my husband said I had to come and get you to say some guy's name.
Oh, God, here he goes again. You do have no shame.
Well, you know, I mean, it was funny. She said, I can't remember, was it? And she stumbled for a moment, and then she sort of got it. So, of course, I always enjoy being able to talk about our favorite Cincinnati Red of all time.
Billy Hamilton?
Luis Alberto Bonilla. Now, that was fun. It was great. And,
Bobby Tolan.
We had some Bobby Tolan talk. Yeah, I mean, that's what's fun about these events. People coming out and they're reference point for the book is whatever chapter they remember that they were there. And it's just been, it's been a blast meeting you guys, and meeting the listeners of the podcast as well, which it amazes me every time we have one of these events, how many of you all come out. And I just could not be more grateful. I got to tell you though, none of them was as fun as the earlier today. I had a chance to run over and, see my 91-year-old grandmother. Today's her birthday. And
happy birthday, Grandma.
Happy birthday. And she's actually, if you have the book, it's dedicated to her. Just a big Reds fan from way back. And she's finally getting a chance to read it here. In the last couple of weeks, she started reading it. And she just wanted to talk about it. Oh, she couldn't believe Joe Morgan, you know, he got hurt and he sat behind home plate. And, oh, what about that Vandermeer, you know? And she was just going on and on. And she said, and I knew when I saw that chapter called Sparky and George, I couldn't wait because Sparky Anderson was just the nicest guy. And I just had a blast talking to her about it. And she's read more of the book than my wife has, which is an ongoing source of discontent in our household. But
you're just making points left and right with your wife, aren't you?
I know. She's not going to listen to this. She wouldn't even read my book. Oh, anyway. So how about we get back to the Cincinnati Reds? You want to?
I think we probably have to.
Yeah, I think so. People are expecting that. And today, a couple of bits of news, and I'm sure everyone knows what the big news is, the manager's hire. But let's talk quickly as we could, because Rawlings announced the finalists for the Gold Glove Awards. You know, and the way they do that these days is, they announce three finalists for each position, and then later on they will announce the winner. And the Reds had two, kind of three finalists for Gold Gloves, and it's ones we've heard before. Billy Hamilton was a finalist for center field Gold Glove. He's never won that before, but been a finalist. This is at least his third time as a finalist, maybe fourth. Joey Votto, who's won one and been a finalist at least a couple of other times, he was a finalist for the first base Gold Glove. And then, of course, Adam Duvall, who played part of the year with the Reds and finished up the season on the Atlanta bench, he was one of the three finalists for left field Gold Glove. I think it's the third straight year that Duvall has been one of the finalists. So any of that surprising to you? Any thoughts about that?
The other thing that surprised me a little bit is that Tucker wasn't a finalist.
It was surprising.
I'm not blown away by the, you know, but I'm a little surprised that he's not a finalist.
I thought he would at least be a finalist, you know, after winning. I see Posey, and I'm trying to remember who it was. I looked to see who was nominated, and I can't remember now. But I was surprised. I'm not surprised about Hamilton or Votto being a finalist.
I'm a little surprised about Votto. They can give me the UZR and all that stuff, but my eyeballs just tell me he's not that great of a defensive first baseman.
Well, I don't know. What are we comparing it to? Are there that many great defensive first basemen?
Well, that's a good point. That's a point too. But
he's no Barry Larkin.
Well, Barry never played first base.
Can you imagine how well he would have played first base though?
Yeah.
Here's the question that I have about Billy Hamilton. You know who Billy Hamilton is? He's a comic book superhero.
I'm hoping that this will be the last thing he ever does in a Reds uniform.
Oh, blasphemy! Here's what I'm thinking. What if he wins the Gold Glove? Bob Castellini will sign him to a lifetime contract.
Oh my! Don't say that, even joking.
Gold Glove center fielder, man.
Mm-hmm.
Come on!
Can't hit his weight, and he doesn't weigh anything.
Yeah, when you're skinny as him and you can't hit your weight, that is pretty bad, isn't it?
It's not good.
Oh, Billy Hamilton and that guy, what's his name? Joey Votto, and then the other guy, Adam Duvall. Congrats to those guys. Hope they all win.
Absolutely. We hope they all win.
Hope they all win. I don't know that any of them are the favorites this year, even Hamilton. So,
but I'll tell you how you could vote for something. I mean, now, we see Billy every day, and I don't see the other finalists every day. But, boy, I struggle to think anybody's better than he is in center field.
And even if someone happened to be this year, at some point you got to give him, like, the lifetime achievement Gold Glove. It's crazy that he's never won one.
It's kind of like when the Bengals were the second-best team in the AFC for years, but they played in the same division as Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
There were years that they lost, you know, two games or three games, and two of them were to Pittsburgh.
What's that, like American football you're talking about?
Huh?
Is that like American football you're talking about? I don't understand.
That's real football.
Oh, I see.
The one with the points on the end.
Oh, I guess if you say so. Okay.
Our FC Cincinnati team did win their first playoff game last week.
Whoa. A Cincinnati team won a playoff game?
It's hard to believe, isn't it?
Oh, my goodness. They actually advanced in the
playoffs? Advanced to the next round.
How does that work?
They had to go to penalty kicks to do it, but they did it.
Wow. That's real football there. That's the best football team in Cincinnati.
Well, there isn't no doubt about that. So, even though the ball doesn't have points.
What about the Reds' manager? The Reds announced this week that
Before we go on to that, I was looking at the article about the Golden Glove, and down at the bottom, I think we ought to tell people that, and I didn't know this. This is the first I knew of it. The Reds Hall of Fame and Museum will close November 1st to undergo renovations, and will reopen with ribbon cutting ceremonies prior to opening day 2019.
Yeah, I was talking with John Arardi actually this weekend about that. That's the first I'd heard of it, and he said they're doing a complete top to bottom remodel of the Hall of Fame, and so I'm excited to see what that's going to be because that's the
as long as it isn't taking money away from payroll.
don't get started. There he goes again. But they do a great job at that Hall of Fame.
Oh, it's amazing. From everybody I've ever heard of, there's not one in baseball that holds a candle to it.
Right. Yeah, I think everyone agrees with that. And so I'm excited to see what they do with the new all the upgrades. So this past week, David Bell was announced as the new manager for the Cincinnati Reds. That's my favorite baseball team. Yes. You may have heard something about David Bell being hired. And you also may have heard something about David Bell's family. His father, Buddy Bell, who played for the Reds briefly, and, of course, Gus Bell. I don't know if I'd say a legendary Red, but certainly a significant Red in the history of this club. Had a really good career for Cincinnati. So David Bell used to be a manager in the system, and now he's going to be the manager of the big league team. And did you get a chance to watch the press conference where he was announced?
No, I saw clips. You know, I didn't see the entire thing. The thing about this to me is, I think we were talking about this last weekend when we were talking about the website and Facebook and things, and sometimes you just don't want to read the comments, you know?
Yeah, usually.
If you had taken David Bell's resume and took his name off the top and just handed it to somebody and say, what do you think about this guy for a manager? You would be nothing because he would check every box you yes. want.
I see where you're going, and that's been one of my frustrations.
And the main complaint I hear about him is that his name is Bell.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry, you should just as I don't want a job. Your name to get you a job. I don't want your name to keep you from getting a job.
That's exactly the point that I've been trying to make, which is that this guy is qualified on his own merits. And we keep hearing nepotism, this and that. And there's a reason for that. Cincinnati has had a long history of wanting to hire guys in-house. A Cincinnati guy.
Hire, sign.
Yeah, right, yes. I mean, it's something that we've seen forever and often has had sort of an outsized role in determining who they're going to bring into this organization. But I don't, you know, and you can say that about David Bell. And if you're really looking for something to get upset about, okay, yeah, his dad already works for the Reds. But I don't know that I look at
he was with the Cardinals, which is another complaint you hear about, you know, a lot of times.
Yeah, David Bell was with the Cardinals. That's another, especially during the Walt Jocketty era. So yeah, okay, if you want to argue that, fine. But you also have to concede that David Bell is a pretty darn good candidate for manager. As shown by the fact that two other teams were chasing him, he has every qualification. Big league player. He's worked in a big league front office. He has been a big league coach and a minor league manager. I mean, he's sort of a younger guy, you know. I mean, he's everything I would have asked for if his name was, you know, Joe Smith and he came from the Tampa Bay Rays or somewhere with this exact same resume. We'd all be like, hey, you know, this is an exciting young hire. But because he's a Bell, and the Reds aren't, I guess I say aren't helping, but the Reds are trying to accentuate that. That's all Bob Castellini wanted to talk about at the press conference and afterwards.
Yeah, and I think that was that's a huge mistake. You know, well, I shouldn't say that. With Joe Fan,
yeah,
it's probably a positive.
But it does a disservice to David Bell.
I don't necessarily agree with that, but it makes people discount his other his other credentials.
No, that's why I say it does him a disservice, because I don't know. I think he deserves this chance, and I think he's earned it, and I'm excited about it. I mean, you know, the way you and I think we were texting at one point last week, right before Bell was announced, and I was like, you know, we were talking about, what if it's Bell? And you were like, well, I'm not against it, you know, and that's the way I am. I don't know if he's going to be a great manager.
Right.
We don't know, but I'm willing to give him a chance because he sort of checks all the boxes that I'm looking for. And I don't know whatever all the other interviews were like, but from what I know about David Bell, yeah, I like it. I mean, I'm happy with it.
Me too. I mean, like you said, without being in the interviews and some of these guys, heck, I didn't know them from, you know, Johnny Appleseed. But, you know, as I said, you know, when we started talking about this, if you had taken a bunch of resumes and sheared the names off the top, it sounds to me like this is the guy that would have risen to the top, because he had all these different levels, different types of experience, including front office, which, you know, other than Armas, pardon me, I don't think any of the other ones had any front office experience.
Right. And also, David Bell has been very clear that he has immersed himself in analytics, and he's been very vocal about wanting to utilize every bit of information he can find to help improve the performance on the field. And so, you know, hearing those things, I'm like, yeah, that's the guy I want now, but I wasn't willing to go out and say David Bell's absolutely the best choice, because I don't know what the rest of the guys said in their interviews. And, you know, so, but I can fully believe that he was the best candidate despite what his name is. And Dick Williams, the Reds' president of baseball operations, said they started with 90 names on their list of candidates. And
that's basically every coach and
right, yeah.
Yeah, everybody's drawing breath in Major League Baseball.
And they narrowed it down to David Bell. And so, I don't know. I just thought it was a good press conference. I thought it was I was impressed with everyone being on the same page. I was impressed with David Bell's willingness to utilize every bit of information at his disposal. I think that there's an opportunity here for him to be a successful manager. But then again, it's all going to depend on the players that Dick Williams and Nick Kroll and Bob Castellini give him. That's what it's going to come down to. He may be the best manager ever. Sparky Anderson couldn't have won with last year's team.
Right. I agree. And he has said some interesting things since he's been hired. You know, I like the fact – one thing he said, which I find a little puzzling, he said the analytics confirms things that are already in practice. But he didn't say what. I'd be curious – and they didn't press him on it. I'd be curious to know exactly what he was talking about. Now he didn't start getting into analytics till 2014, so he's – I mean, I guess for – a guy that was already in baseball, that's not late. You know, that's when people were starting. You know, we've been talking analytics for 20 years at right. different varying levels. So, you know, he said he's open-minded as to how all these other teams are using pitching now. I think that's real interesting. One of the other things that he said in one of these articles that I read, and this is the first time I remember, now maybe the Reds have said this in the past and I don't remember it, but they're talking about a systematic wide approach.
Yeah.
And if that's the case, boy, I'm happy to hear that. Because that's one of the things we've been complaining about for years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, top to bottom.
Yeah.
And you need to have everybody pulling in the same direction. And none of us have had the sense that that's happened in Cincinnati before.
Well, the fact that they, and I think Steve wrote it on the webs on Red Lake Nation, you can't help but be impressed with this search.
Oh, absolutely.
If they really started with 90 guys and brought 12 guys in for interviews, now, is it 12 real candidates, or you know, is that counting, you know, Freddie Benavidez and, you know.
Yeah, the courtesy candidates.
Yeah, courtesy interviews. But they talked in one of these things where I guess the serious candidates, each one of their interviews took a full day. Mm-hmm. That's a heck of an interview. I've had jobs. You know, important jobs, good jobs that didn't interview me for longer than a couple hours.
All right.
Well, I think that's pretty impressive.
Well, it's one of the guys that's leading one of the parts of your billion-dollar company here.
Right.
I think we've been saying for months the Reds need to do a full search, and you know, not limit it to people in, within the organization. And yes, they ended up hiring a guy whose dad already works for them. But I just, I'm so pleased with the process. It's exactly what I was begging for this summer when everybody, including certain beat writers, were ringing the bell that the Reds need
and
to...
Reds announcer
that the Reds need to go ahead and make Jim Riggleman the full-time manager. And I thought, no, why wouldn't you go through this full process and interview people outside the organization? And Dick Williams said something about being able to talk to other candidates outside the organization has... and get their feedback on the way the Reds are currently doing things, allow them to see things that maybe they've been missing or to think about things in a different way. And I just think for the whole organization, it's nothing but a good thing. And I don't hear any of those guys still saying, well, why didn't you hire Jim Riggleman after a full search was done? Clearly, David Bell is a much better candidate than Jim Riggleman for manager of this team going forward.
I don't have to argue with that. I honestly don't. There was some Nightingale wrote an article 2 days ago in the Enquirer, but and you could have talked a little bit about it. We're talking about the Reds learned how much the Reds learned about themselves, and like you said, the search makes them look inward and see what the organizations need, what the organization needs, and they learn from what they pick up in these interviews how other teams are doing things.
Yeah, I thought it was great.
The other thing is that came out in that article was at a certain point in the process they prioritized major league coaching experience. So I don't know who that knocked out of the box.
Yeah.
But it must have, you know, had an interview or an effect.
And my guess is the reason they did that is a different interview I saw that Dick Williams did with Lance McAllister on the radio. And really a revealing interview, may have revealed more than Dick Williams wanted to reveal, in which he said that he feels like the Reds have not done as well as they could have in the recent past in communicating the analytical concepts and all the information and all the research are doing, communicating that to the players. And he thinks with David Bell that was one of the priorities. And maybe that's why you wanted a guy that's been a big league coach, but is able, so he's able to communicate well with his players. And David Bell said he was going to as well. And I can say now, since Dick Williams said that, when we had our little Red Leg Nation, they talked to some of our writers, and they're really kind to us, give us some time with Sam Grossman, assistant general manager, and with Dick Williams. And one of the first questions we had for those guys, and I can't remember who asked the question, was what is in place to get this information to the players? How does that process work? You know, and I'm not going to say exactly what was said, but I'll say that I was.
You mean the analytical concepts and that kind of thing? Is that what we're talking about?
Yeah, whatever research they're doing, whatever they think can help the players on the field, how is it being relayed to the players to improve performance? And again, I'm not going to say exactly what was said because there wasn't really a satisfactory answer. And I got the sense that there was not really a good, I think that under Brian Price and Jim Riggleman, there was perhaps some resistance. And they didn't say that specifically, but that's what it came across to me. But there was a realization that they needed someone that could, we're all one team. Hey, we got some of this, you know, a lot of teams are sending these analytics guys on the road with them. You know, they're in the clubhouse every day. And I don't get the sense, based upon what Dick Williams said to Lance McAllister, that that's been the case lately. And I think it's absolutely going to be the case going forward. And I think we can get upset about the fact that it's not been that way because we're behind every other organization in baseball practically. But the fact is, at least they're moving in the right direction finally, I think. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and when we were talking about the major league experience before, it also gives you credibility with these players if you'd at least coached in the big leagues.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
If you'd only been a minor league coach, pardon me, you know, somebody, you know, like, and you're going to tell Joey Votto something?
Right.
I think you might have a credibility problem.
Yeah. David Bell played 12 years. He managed some of these guys in the minor leagues. He, you know, he's been a coach at the big league level.
Right.
Worked in front. I mean, I think he's an outstanding candidate. And
the other thing that I found interesting from one of these articles is the front office sees Bell as being able to send a unifying message to the players.
Yeah.
Was there a problem with that before?
That's the subtext, it seems like, doesn't it?
You know, I think we're going to learn a lot more. I agree with you. I think this is the best hire that the Reds could make.
Yeah, I think so.
And you know, you guys can complain, oh, it's just, he's a Bell, or, you know, they went cheap. those are the people that wanted Girardi, you know, and that's all supposition. Nobody knows any of that stuff.
Right.
You know, it's just somebody griping because they, you know, either because they like to gripe or they feel like they have grounds to gripe. But I think the next telling thing is going to be when they announce the coaching staff.
Yeah. And I don't think any of the current coaches are coming back.
The only one I could see possibly coming back is Hatcher. Because the front office loves him. Well, I shouldn't say he's been here. I shouldn't say that. He's been here a long time.
Yeah, but he's been here through some good times and bad
times.
There's
no reason to keep him. If they want to keep him in the organization, make him a minor league instructor somewhere.
Yeah.
A minor league outfield instructor, roving instructor or something like that. Like they did to Mac Jenkins when they demoted him.
Right. But I think we're going to get all new guys just because I think there's going to be a clean break and bring in all guys who are comfortable utilizing all information at their disposal and being able to get that to the players. I mean, okay. I think it's going to be a distinct change in the way the Reds
position. Okay, so now that we've got all the expectations built up here, let me throw some water.
Okay, let's hear it.
Why do we believe that we aren't going to have the same problems between ownership and the front office that we've had in the past?
There is zero reason to believe that. That part will be any better.
So all of this is for naught if that is true.
Probably. I mean, you can have the best relationship ever amongst, it's sort of what we said earlier, amongst your manager and front office and all those lines of communication open. But if the players that manager is being provided or the players that the front office is permitted to go get are not good enough, then it doesn't matter. Yeah, right. Yeah.
I mean, I heard you mention last week on the podcast about a certain player who's been traded a number of times, supposedly.
That's the story.
And, you know, and that's insane.
It's just.
But, and I've said this on here before, and I think you probably said the same thing, at least probably better. But when you've got an owner that's fallen in love with players, you're on the road to ruin.
Yeah, oh, yeah. There's no doubt about it. Because the job of running a major league franchise cannot be correctly handled if you're governed by emotion or
exactly.
The fact that you like one guy or don't like another guy. You got to be sort of cold hearted and say, I love this guy, but to make this team better, I got to trade him. And so, and the owner is clearly governed by emotion and by his fandom. And I get it. I am too, but I'm not making these decisions. So
you have to realize that to achieve the goal that you promised this city so many years ago,
yeah,
you can't treat this like a $30 billion toy to play with.
Fantasy team.
Yeah. Well, not even fantasy team. Fantasy team, you don't pick your favorite guys. You pick guys you think are going to help you win.
Not me. I used to play fantasy baseball, and I just pick all Reds.
How many times do you win your division?
Zero.
Mm-hmm. I think there's something to be learned there.
Yeah, maybe so. Maybe so. Well, let's get in now, if we could, to the interview that we've got here, because there's some telling comments, I think, about the Reds' new manager in there. And why don't you go ahead and I can do it, but why don't you go ahead and intro this interview, Bill, because you did a really good interview with our buddy Matt Klinker.
Yeah, it's always good. Anybody who's been listening to these podcasts for a long time knows that over the years, Matt and I became pretty good friends, to the point where it concerned me a little bit that his parents would think that there was something weird going on with my wife and I, and because we used to go see Matt play and all that kind of thing. So Matt, I may have told this story on here, but at one point Matt fixed us up with his parents. And had us over for when in the off season we went to dinner over at the Klinker's house. They live about 15 minutes from us, and we all had dinner. And his parents are wonderful people, just wonderful people.
Well, before you go any further, let me just, for those of you who don't know, Matt Klinker's a guy that we've been doing this podcast since 2007.
Yeah, I was getting there, Chad.
Well, you were slowly rolling around to us. So go ahead and tell us who Matt Klinker is for those of you that haven't been listening.
We used to have this program on Red Leg Nation called our Spotlight Players. And they were minor league guys that we kind of formed a bond with in one way or another, and followed their path through the minor leagues. Matt was probably our longest running spotlight player. Devin Mesoraco was kind of a spotlight player. Tucker Barnhart was kind of a spotlight player, but we'd started kind of getting away from the idea at that point. Most of the guys we had didn't make it above A ball, I don't think. Matt was in 2011 was bouncing between double and triple A. And he talks a little bit about that in the interview, but, Matt retired and has gone on to have a wonderful life. And he talks, he tells, he, in the interview, he talks about his personal life a little bit, what's happened to him since he got out of baseball. And then we talk a little bit about, we talk about the Reds for a little while and should I give away Matt? I'm going to give this part away.
Give it
Matt,
away.
Big David Bell fan. Matt played for David Bell for 3 years, parts of 3 years in Carolina in 09, 10 and 11. And, Matt really, really is a David Bell fan.
So it's going to be an interesting look at from someone who's actually been in the clubhouse with the Reds' new manager. And, it's good stuff. Good stuff.
And this was before David Bell turned to analytics.
Right. Yeah.
So it's a whole, you know, different, you know, Matt has a different perspective than probably the person David Bell is now. Of course, you know, none of us are the same people we were 4 or 5 years ago.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I'm not, but, so anyway, let's go ahead and dig into this. And then after we come back, maybe Bill and I can answer a few, viewer mail questions. What do you think, Bill?
I think they're not viewers.
Viewer mail coming up after this fun interview with our buddy Matt Klinker talking to Bill.
Doing great. Thanks for having me on.
Well, it's great to catch up with you again. You retired from the Reds in, what, 2011? Tell us what you've been doing since then.
After the 2011 season in the U.S., I went to Venezuela and played for a couple different teams. Pretty interesting how they have their winter league set up, where you play for one team, and if they don't qualify for the next round of the playoffs, the teams that are still around can select players from the eliminated teams. So that actually happened each round of the playoffs. So I kept moving to different teams. So that was late October 2011 till about February, right before I was supposed to report to spring training in 2012. I think I ended the 2011 season with the Reds on the DL with a broken rib. And I was kind of looking for jobs, and I found a pretty good opportunity. My agent called me with the opportunity to play in Venezuela. So I was like, I'm going to go make some cash and then, you know, start a professional, you know, a real world job. As soon as the season's over, it was kind of a flexible start time. They really didn't want me until like January 1, 2012. So, played in Venezuela that winter and then got back to the U.S. in February and started a job with, Ferguson, you know, pipe supply, in late February 2012. Moved to Houston, Texas in July of 2012. With them, relocated, and then have worked for a couple other different companies here in the Houston area, and just business development and sales in kind of the oil and gas sector. And it's been great. Met my wife in Houston. She's actually from Northwest Indiana, but met her in the summer of 2013. We married the summer of 14. Added our first son in April of 2017, and then 4 weeks ago added our second son. So Levi's the oldest, he's a year and a half, and then George is the recent addition. So happy family.
That's wonderful. That is really cool. Is Victoria, is she from the Lafayette area?
Not Lafayette. She did go to Purdue. That's kind of how we, one of the trends that we had that we talked about when we first met was that she was a Purdue grad, and both my parents went to Purdue, and my extended family's from Lafayette area. She's actually from a little further north, like Schererville, Merrillville area, kind of just south of Gary. But yeah, she did graduate from Purdue. So
your parents approved.
Definitely. Yeah, absolutely.
When you and I talked about doing this, we were going to talk about, you know, I'd asked you if you were still following the Reds, and you said, yeah. But in lieu of the David Bell hiring, I went back and started looking at his career with the Reds, and I noticed that you played for him for part of three seasons. So let's talk about David Bell for a few minutes.
Yeah, sure. He spent 3 years in Carolina, and I got to, you know, each 9, 10, and 11, I spent bits of those seasons in Double A under his management. So a great guy, very happy for him. You know, I will say, in my time in the minors with the Reds, I don't think there's another guy. I mean, Matt Jenkins and I connected early on, you know, when I was in rookie ball and just feeling like I didn't have a place and I was just a roster filler. He really encouraged me. But then, you know, later on, there wasn't a single person in the entire organization that I felt supported me and wanted my development more than David. And it wasn't just me, it was everyone. You know, some managers are there to win, and player development is a secondary that comes to that. Some managers have their favorite players, but David, I mean, was across the board. He wanted the best situation to put all his players in, and he was a great guy to play for.
Can you tell us a little bit about his style in the dugout and on and managing games?
So he's a very soft-spoken guy, but he'll go to level 10 if he needs to. But very soft-spoken, and he's gonna, you know, give you every opportunity to you know, to achieve or to prove yourself or to not prove yourself. And you know, a lot of coaches will kind of not give you the string to hang yourself, but you know, David definitely will put you in, when give you the opportunity to succeed, and then it's up to you. So and that's what players want. You know, we want to be able to go out there and compete and challenge ourselves.
When you knew David Bell, or when you played for David Bell, it was very early in his career as a coach manager, and since then, you know, he's been bench coaches for the Cardinals, he's been hitting coach, and then with the Giants he moved into the front office. It seems to me like he really checked all the boxes that you want in a manager.
Well, I think almost check all the boxes for like a GM level. You know, I think after doing 3 years in Double A and then a year in Triple A, you know, I think that would have led to a big league manager position. But, you know, the other experiences kind of, you know, kind of walking the line between player development, the front office, and the big league, you know, staff, kind of getting that experience, you know, that obviously that's beneficial to anyone. But, you know, major league level as a manager, you're not dealing with the minor league system. So I think that experience is great. I'm not sure how, you know, tangible it's going to be or how useful it's going to be in a major league manager position.
Did you follow the Reds manager search very closely?
I'm sorry?
Did you follow the Reds managerial search closely from down in Houston?
I mean, a little bit. When, especially, so, like, Girardi's name got brought up, and that kind of piqued my interest. And then I started doing some research about who they were interested in. And, I mean, listen, I support David all the way, but it just, unfortunately, and I think it's a great decision, but, I mean, it just seems a little cliche, in my honest opinion. I don't know if there's another candidate out there that's more, you know, qualified for the position, but, I mean, I think the Reds ownership and front office is already a little ancestral as it is, and, you know, it's hard, maybe it's hard to get away from the Bell family. They have such a good pedigree, but, you know, it's just an interesting pick.
Yeah, I'm not as concerned about that because he has so much experience in these other organizations that have winning, recent winning history where the Reds don't, you know, the Cardinals, the Cubs, the Giants. You know, he's going to bring what he learned in those organizations hopefully back to the Reds.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I mean, he was it the 2001 Mariners? I mean, I remember him telling stories on the bus in Carolina about that team, and I mean, there's no other winning, no more winning team than that. So, you know, and I think being in a winning atmosphere just kind of breeds more winning. So hopefully he can bring, you know, hopefully some of that is contagious with the current Reds team. And, you know, I think he's got uphill battle. He, you know, a couple of the deals they have kind of hamstring the team. But, you know, I think he'll do a great job.
You talk about the uphill battle and everybody knows that this Reds team, that this isn't even the most important decision this team will make in this offseason. They have to go out and find pitching. Do you believe that they'll go out and bring in the pitching they need to make this team competitive next year?
I don't know how you can. I mean, the Homer deal could go down as one of the worst pitching contracts in the history of the game. And I mean, you could try to package him and eat his salary, and I still don't think anyone's going to pick him up. So, and then, I mean, nothing against Votto. I think he's the best, you know, left-handed hitter in baseball. His power numbers were a little down this year, but, and I think he's justified every single dollar of his contract and, his approach at the plate, you know, Pujols was always a powers guy. Power numbers are on a dip when you age. I don't think the risk is there with Votto, but still, with him under contract for four more years, you know, that your flexibility to make some moves is not there. So, you know, until they can move like a Billy Hamilton or you know, even though I wouldn't want to see him go, you know, you Scooter, you know, that's kind of a buy low, and you know, his stock is probably never going to be higher. And you know, after next year, he's going to get probably a 3 or 4 year deal. So, you know, maybe move a couple of those kind of guys and bring in some pitching, but it's going to be tough.
And I don't know if you've seen this, the Castellini quotes down there in Houston, but you know they've said they're going to increase payroll. They haven't said how much. And Castellini is quoted the other day as saying, "We will get pitching." You know, I think it all depends on how much they're going to increase the payroll.
Just because you spend money doesn't mean you're going to get a competitive team. I mean, you go out and get a guy like Matt Harvey, and you know he's on the wrong side of 30. So, just because you spend money doesn't mean you're doing it in an effective and efficient manner. So I think that's what the fans wanted to hear, and so he said it. You know, we'll see.
So you don't have a whole lot of confidence that 2019 is going to be any different than 2018?
I don't think 2020, I mean, until they get rid of Homer's deal, and I think they're you know, it's they don't have a lot of flexibility.
So offense.
I mean, some of the hitters outperformed expectations. So, you know, maybe you get a couple pitchers that do that next year, and you know, something good could happen. But as far as making a, you know, a banner acquisition or trade, I don't see it happening.
Okay. So what are your other thoughts as a former player on this Reds team? You got notes in front of you. You showed me your notes. What do you?
I mean, what I think is funny is, I mean, just looking back now, and I mean, it's crazy that it's been 7 years and just the direction that the Reds are going, and it just seems like there's just really, it doesn't seem like there's like a 3 to 5 year plan. It just seems like, you know, we're very reactionary. And, you know, I moved to Houston in 2012, and Astros were garbage. And in 2013, my buddy John and I were out having dinner, and the Astros had like a front office, like, mingle, you know, outing. And so I'm at the bar with like the assistant general manager, and, you know, we're talking baseball, and he finds out my story, and I was like, so what's the deal? And he's like, give us 3 years. I was like, 3 years? He's like, yep, give us 3 years. And that was 2013, and, you know, he turned around in 2016, and he was absolutely right. So they put a game plan together, and they executed it. And I think that's what, you know, that's what it's going to take. You got to take it on the chin, and instead of trying to save face each year and year out, you know, put together a long-term plan and then go out and execute it.
What do you think about the way the game is being played from the pitching standpoint right now? It seems like the value of starting pitchers is decreasing and the value of bullpen is increasing. Do you agree with that?
I don't know. I mean, starting pitching is always valuable. Relievers are getting stretched. You know, it's not just get me six and then I'm going to go 7, 8, 9 with three different guys to slam the door. You know, managers are pulling guys in the fourth and the fifth and then stretching a reliever 2 innings plus. It's different, but if you look at what guys like Verlander are doing and Kershaw are doing, they're still going deep into games, and it saves your bullpen. I don't know.
Well, the Verlanders and Kershaws, there aren't a whole lot of guys that pitch at that level, though.
Understand, but is it the chicken or the egg? Are we demanding less of our starters, and therefore we're getting less out of our starters, or are the starters not that good, so therefore we have to rely on our relievers more?
What's it like living in American League City now?
I mean, it's different. I will say I love the move for the Astros. In 2012, when I moved here, you know, the Reds were down all the time. I think twice the second half. So that was fun to watch him, but I felt like I couldn't cheer for the Astros. I had to cheer for the Reds. And then 2013, they make the jump, and, you know, I could cheer for both teams. And the Reds still came back for interleague play that year, so that was great. But, yeah, I mean, I think it's, I would love to see the Astros in the National League still, so we got to see the Reds in town more. But, you know, in the American League, now I get to root for two teams. So, and, you know, if they ever meet in the World Series, which I hope they do, I'm not sure who I'd pull for.
Have you kept in contact with any of your old teammates?
You know, I texted Cozart, and Mesoraco every now and then, but most of the guys I do stay in touch with, most aren't playing anymore. So it's got, you know, career minor leaguers like myself who never made it. So
ever had any second thoughts?
Well, yeah. When the Reds start 3-15, obviously you have second thoughts.
All right, let's start wrapping this.
When homers have got,
go ahead.
When homers got an ERA close to 7, of course you got second thoughts.
And you'd have done it for half the money.
Yeah, give me the minimum.
Anyway, Matt, let's start wrapping this up here. Anything you'd like to finish up on here, talking about the Reds, or things you've seen, or things you think they should do?
Pray.
but you think they? It sounds
no. Weird. They'll
go ahead.
They'll figure it out. I mean, they got a good group, good ownership group, and I mean, it's a business, right? So they have to make money. So I really don't expect them to go crazy with the payroll, but that doesn't mean you can't win. You know, they just have to find a way to do it with developing players. And, you know, I think, you know, there was definitely some positives this year with the team. And hopefully they can kind of capture those and make some acquisitions with trades to kind of maybe fill the minor leagues and then make a push in 2 or 3 years.
Something just occurred to me, and you can probably express it. One of the things that some of us are frustrated with the Reds organization is that they bring their minor leaguers through the organization very slowly. Especially like compared to the Braves, who you know, bring their guys through quickly and have them in the big leagues, you know, at 19, 20 years old. Did you feel that way when you were in the minor leagues, that they were slow bringing guys through?
I mean, absolutely, when I was in the minor leagues, and I'm not saying that because I'm jaded, but I'm saying that because the big league team was stacked. You know, I mean, 2010, they were phenomenal. There wasn't room to bring up guys. I mean, sure, you see what Yasmani Grandal and Yonder Alonso are doing and other organizations, what Frazier's done since he's left the Reds. And, you know, you wonder why those guys had to spend a year in every single minor league spot. But, you know, there just wasn't room. Sure, you can look back then and, oh, well, why didn't Scott Rowland have a spot? Couldn't you move Cozart to third and get him up a year earlier? I mean, sure, but, you know, they had a lot of pieces of the puzzle in place, and they tried to just tack on a few, you know, veteran leadership kind of guys to get them over the top. And, you know, I still think of the Giants, when they had the Giants down, you know, 2-0, and then the Giants came back. I mean, that was the year, you know, that was the team that was destined. And that's what you got to do. You got to put the pieces of the puzzle in place and try to make a run like that. And unfortunately, they ran into a buzzsaw that year, but you know, you can't, I mean, it's tough to be good every year. Try to just put a good team together every 5 years and then rebuild the other years. You're not the Yankees.
Yeah. Of course, the reason you're talking about they didn't bring people up when you were in, they don't have that same reasoning now.
Yeah, sure, exactly. And, you know, if you looked at how many guys in 2010 got at least one inning, you know, pitched one inning in the majors, and compared that to the number of guys who pitched one, you know, at least one innings this year with the Reds, I'd be shocked if it wasn't double.
Yeah. All right. Anything else that you'd like to say to Red Leg Nation?
No, that's it. You know, I appreciate all the support during my time in the minors, and it's good to catch up. And you know, hopefully you guys enjoy the off season, enjoy some Bengals football, and we'll look forward to pitchers and catchers in late February.
And hopefully we can do this again.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me.
All righty. Thank you, Matt.
And we're back. Bill Lack and Matt Klinker. That was fun.
Always good to talk to Matt. He's just a great guy. He always, you know, when he lived here, it was always great seeing him in the off season. I want to tell one quick little Matt story to tell you the kind of person Matt is. When my son got ready to go to college, and I may have told this story on a podcast before, I don't know. When my son got ready to go to college, Matt and he had gone to the same high school, not at the same time, but Matt sat down and wrote up the ABCs of going to college, A through Z, wrote it up and gave it to my son before he left for college. I think that's pretty cool.
He's a unique young man. And even back when, you know, he was in his early 20s and we were talking to him, just uncommonly mature and just a really nice guy. So appreciate him taking even more time for us after all these years.
Oh, and he wants to come back.
Yeah, well, absolutely. We'll have him back anytime. Yep. So you ready for a little bit of viewer mail?
I'm ready for some listener mail.
Why do you keep doing this, Bill? It's viewer mail, man.
Can they see you?
Yes.
They don't know you're sitting there in a T-shirt and your underwear.
Easy now. I got sweatpants on. I want to thank all of you for sending the viewer mail questions. I'm just sort of blown away by the response to it. And we're probably not going to be able to get to all of them because we got so many this week. But I promise you that...
Wait. I want to go back to last week's questions.
Okay.
For one second.
All right.
Because I beat you up with this
I know.
Two things. One is you forgot that Tony Perez managed in Miami for best part of a year.
Well, my next book's going to be the Big 50, The Men and Moments That Made the Miami Marlins.
There you go. And then the other one was you guys disrespected Sparky Anderson, both of you, when you talked about when you had the manager's question. I mean, Sparky was the one that created the bullpen usage. I mean, basically what they're doing now, Sparky was doing in the 70s. And you dismissed that. You dismissed the fact that he had a very young team when he took that over in 1970. I don't think there was a guy on a regular player that was over 30.
Are you finished berating me?
Okay, we can move on now.
I never saw him. I never really saw the Reds with Sparky.
Oh, no, I told him, you, so. But you were ready to bring back the manager from the 1940 Reds.
That's a good team.
Yeah, and that 75-76 team, they were a bunch of slackers.
Overrated. You're probably right, as I conceded this weekend. You're probably right. I think we were just sort of staying away from Sparky because that's the answer. Because
it's the easy answer.
It's the easy answer. We were trying to get cute.
All right, moving on.
All right, moving on.
I just wanted you to tell me I was right.
All right, you're right for the first time ever. Viewer mail. See, you've already gotten me in trouble with Bill, you guys, but I want to
listener mail.
I want to tell you that we did get a lot of questions this week. I'm not sure how many we can get to, but we'll get to as many as we can. And I promise you, if you don't get it answered on the podcast, I am reading all of these viewer mail questions, and love the fact that you guys are getting more involved in the podcast. So I'm going to pick one at random. Here we go. Oh, here we go. Listen to this. Now, this is someone that's directing this probably to me. It's from Vander1017 on Twitter at Vander1017.
What's Twitter?
Twitter.com is a horrible website. So anyway, Vander1017 on Twitter asks, you could have to choose one job for the rest of your professional life. Which do you choose and why? Number one, Supreme Court Justice. Number two, literally any job associated with MLB, Reds GM, Commissioner, Ball Boy, etc. I guess that's probably directed to me, right?
I think it probably is, because I don't think I've got the credentials to be a Supreme Court Justice.
Neither do I. If I could choose one job for the rest of my professional life, it would, of those two, it would easily be general manager of the Cincinnati Reds. Love what I do, and,
of course, you wouldn't have that job for the rest of your life because all those positions are created for you to be fired.
See, that's the thing, though, is that his question said you choose it for the rest of your professional life, so I'm assuming I'm going to be a lifetime GM.
So you're going to be like a Bell. You'll work for the Reds forever.
A Jockety. I'll be Walt Jockety.
You'll be Walt. Ooh, you're going to be the next Walt Jockety.
That's what I always dreamed of. All right. Thanks for the question at Vander1017, who emailed me at chaddotson@redlegnation.com. That's how you can have your question hopefully answered on the podcast during this viewer mail segment where we answer questions from viewers.
Here he goes again.
All right. Let's see what we got now. How about one from, who are we going? Where are we going next? I'm going to answer this one, even though it's, this is from Colin Mickle. I assume it's Mickle. Colin says, thanks for all for the podcast, the site. It's invaluable as a Reds fan to have a source providing intelligent yet clear-sighted commentary on the team. He must be a new viewer.
He must be reading the website, not listening to the podcast.
That's right. Colin, that's much appreciated. And he said, my viewer mail question may be one that you're too tactful and professional to answer on the podcast. And if so, I completely understand. But I'm going to take it.
Tactful and us?
Well, sometimes we have to be.
Maybe when you're on with somebody else.
Maybe. The question is, are the Reds beat writers a problem?
We talked a little bit about this on Saturday.
Yeah.
To me, the answer is yes. I shouldn't say. I don't know if a problem is the right word.
Yeah. That's too strong.
I've never held a job, so I don't know how difficult it is. And we've never had a beat writer here, I don't think, that I can remember, even including McCoy, that really held a player's feet to the fire. Not like you read about happens in New York or Philly or probably Chicago, Boston, but do I think they push as much as they probably should? No, but it's easy for us to say.
Yeah.
Because we don't have to deal with them we don't have to deal with those guys, for 6 months. And if you become too big of a pain in the rear end, they're just going to quit talking to you.
Yeah.
And then what do you do?
Is it a situation where there really isn't, like in the old days, you'd have your reporters, which is what these guys really are, versus sort of more opinion guys. And the reporter just reports the news. He just reports what's going on with the team. And an opinion guy might be the one that's not carrying the team's water, as Colin put it, but might be holding their feet to the fire. And maybe the way that media is today, they're forced to sort of be both of those. And, it's an uncomfortable thing because they have to face these guys every day.
And you can make that same case with regular news. How much straight news is there anymore, really?
Yeah.
You watch the channel that's going to give you the slant that you want to hear. I do think that the columnists are the Doherty's, they at least don't make any bones about the fact that it's their opinion.
Right.
The John Fays and I like John. He's a good guy. He's a really good guy.
All these guys are great guys, and they've all been, except for the new guy, they've all been on the podcast, and I like them all.
John is the only one that I know that I've ever met. And like I said, it's easy to say but as somebody in our discussion on Saturday when we were just standing around talking, a lot of it just seems like now they're the PR arm of the Reds.
Let me read a little bit more of Colin's question because I think this might sort of put some context to it. Colin says, those guys seem so hostile and defensive in their interactions with fans who offer the slightest frustration or criticism of this, let's face it, pretty lousy organization. I don't spend a lot of time on Twitter, not familiar with the media ecosystem covering other teams, but it seems that the Reds beat is particularly broken in this aspect. He said, let's see. I missed it. It just seems like they're carrying the team's water and sniping at fans on Twitter. And I think maybe part of it is carrying the team's water. You know, I don't know. Maybe I'm going to try to be too tactful and professional to answer this on the podcast. But,
well, I think part of the thing, and it sounds like he's catching a lot of this on Twitter, and part of it is the problem is the medium.
I think there's two things. I think they are very cozy with the team.
Yeah.
I think they're very cozy.
But when we talked to Chris Welch, I wouldn't say Chris is carrying the team. I would never say Chris is carrying the team's water.
No. But he's also been around for X number of years, and I don't know. Is he in the clubhouse every day? I don't know.
I don't. My guess is he's only in the clubhouse in the days he's working.
Yeah. So, and I think that you have to have a little sympathy for these guys on Twitter, because I get just a tiny amount of the nonsense that gets directed at them.
That's my point.
But yeah. I do get some of it, and I can see why they come off as hostile and defensive in their interactions with fans, because they are dealing with the very worst of the Reds fan base often.
Well, and it's like what happened with you with Green.
Yeah.
I mean, isn't that a fair comparison here?
I remember that. Yeah, I mean, I think they're getting people just screaming at them all the time, and I think they probably default to trying to be reasonable. And sometimes that comes across as being carrying the team's water. I don't.
Or snide or snotty.
Yeah.
I can see. Plus the fact that if you've been doing any writing or anything, or writing emails or dealing with social media for any length of time, you never know what your tone is when you're writing. It has so much to do with how people want to read it.
Yes, absolutely. So, I think they've got a difficult job in some ways. I think are the ways that the beat could, that I would, if I were in that job, I can say that easy for me to say, but would I do things differently? I would hope so. But on the other hand, I don't know. It's a difficult media environment. There's me being trying to be tactful.
Well, and you know, and you always, when you're sitting here and reading things later, you always think, well, why didn't he ask this or why didn't he ask that? And you and I have both done interviews with people, and when you listen to them later, you go, crap, why didn't I ask him this after he said that? You know, because sometimes you're already thinking about your next question instead of listening to what they're telling you.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
So, you know, I think it's real easy to throw, you know, stones. But, you know, do I think they could do a better job, you know, when a player does something that's obviously wrong, you know, and try to get a, you know, put them to the wall and make them give, you know, an answer? Yeah. But I think it's easier to probably get some players to talk to you than others.
Yeah.
You know, we've heard these guys, the beat writers, talk for years, and it was very apparent. You know, I think John Fay said one time that Adam Dunn was one of the best people that he ever dealt with. Mm-hmm. Adam, no matter what happened, was standing in his locker every night after the game was over, whether he won the game or lost the game, and was talking to you. And you and I both know that there are other players on this team, because they've come after Red Leg Nation. If they don't like anything negative being said or written about.
Right. And especially the players these days don't have to go through the media. They got right. Their own social media outlets. They can say whatever they want. So mm-hmm. The job has changed for a beat writer, you know, and it's a difficult one, but I think there are fair areas for criticism while also acknowledging that it's a difficult job.
Absolutely.
All right. Let's go to one more here from David Haynes at WDHaynes1, who emailed us, chad.dotson@redlegnation.com. Love the podcast and the site, longtime Reds fans. Said, I've read so much about the Reds, including a great book he mentioned there. Yes, I have heard of that book, actually. It's really good. It's called The Big 50, The Minute Moments. Anyway, a question for the viewer mail. The title of his email was Viewer Mail, a.k.a. Listener Email, so he threw a bone to you there. Tell me what you think the biggest what-if of the last 30 years or so is. And the examples he gives are, what if Jose Rio and Tom Browning don't get hurt in the early 90s? What if Marge doesn't run Davey off? What if the 99 Reds scored against Al Leiter? I know what my answer is here, and it may be the same as yours. We haven't talked about this beforehand, but do you have one? Or do you want me to go ahead and tell you mine? The biggest what if of the last 30 years?
Mine would be, what if the Reds had come back and won that next game against the Giants in the playoffs? Do they go on and win the World Series?
I think they were as good a team as in the National as there was in the National League that year.
That's my the last 30 years. That's probably my biggest what if.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to count up 30 years. Yeah, I think I'm within the 30 years. My biggest what if is, what if Eric Davis could stay healthy?
Yeah,
I think Eric Davis is an Inner Circle Hall of Famer if he stays healthy.
It's hard to argue with that.
I mean, I think he was Willie Mays in 1987.
I think he was better than Willie Mays in 1987.
I think Willie Mays actually said that, he said, "I'm honored by the comparison to Eric Davis that year."
Yeah.
That's a quote that's in the book, The Big 50. never mind.
There he goes again.
Let's see. We got time for one more. Let me find one here.
That's a good question. Thanks for that question. That's a really interesting question. I like that one.
That is a good one. Absolutely.
And if we sat and thought, we might be able to come up with different answers.
Yeah.
You know, but coming off the top of our head, that's what we got. But it's a really good question. Thank you.
It's a fun one to talk about. And I like that type of question. And yep. As I said, you can email us. And they don't have to be just about baseball. And they don't just have to be about the current team. Ask whatever you want. We'll try to answer it if we can.
Yeah, but don't send these wackadoodle questions in like they send to Marty for that Cincinnati Bell thing.
Oh, come on. I don't know what the word wackadoodle means, where you pulled that one out from. But
when you're as old as I am, you make up words.
Okay. Well, we got one from Mike McClanahan. Mike asks, viewer mail submission. We got a hitter's ballpark, no pitching coaching staff, a meddling owner, and malcontent Homer Bailey hanging around. I can see just Homer Bailey wearing a hoodie or something.
You're really pumping up the adrenaline here.
His viewer mail question is, why would free agent pitchers ever want to come to Cincinnati?
That's a good question.
I know the money. Answer.
Money.
Money. Money talks.
And you know, if you got a pitcher that can keep the ball down, get ground balls, doesn't matter how big the ballpark is.
Yeah.
Absolutely. You know, the two big thing, you know, and you said this a number of times during the manager search, that's not going to be the biggest decision as to the Reds' future that happens this year.
Yeah.
It's going to be what they do in the offseason with bringing in new players. And Matt talked a little bit about that in the interview.
Yeah, that's going to be key. This is the one that gets the splashy headlines right now, but what's going to happen this and with pitchers? Bob Castellini is going to have to lay out some cash.
And you said, we're going to get the pitching. Of course, you know, if that includes, it means my huge fear is that they're going to, you know, re-sign. They'll get some mediocre guy and re-sign Harvey and say, well, we went out and got pitching.
Got the pitching. Yeah, I don't want to talk about that right now. That's what I'm concerned about as well. Bill, we got to wrap it up, man.
Here we go.
All right, this is the Red Leg Nation Radio, episode number 232 of the World's Most Dangerous Podcast. If you're not a subscriber already, go subscribe, iTunes, Stitcher, wherever you get your podcasts. Find us at Red Leg Nation on Twitter. At Red Leg Radio is the podcast's handle on Twitter. And you can find us at redlegnation.com every single day, where we're following the Cincinnati Reds. As I said, go subscribe. Also, leave us a good rating and a review, if you would, wherever you get your podcast. Certainly would appreciate that. If you like us, talk about us. If you don't like us, keep your mouth shut. Yes. Bill, always fun talking to you, buddy.
Always good to be with you, my friend.
All right, for Bill Lack and Matt Klinker, this is Chad Dotson saying so long, everyone.
Thanks for listening to Red Leg Nation Radio from RedLegNation.com. Subscribe to Red Leg Nation Radio on iTunes or through your favorite podcast app. And join us for discussion of all things Reds at RedLegNation.com. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.